You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
From baseball's top personalities,
the Hall of Famer, one of the great TV broadcasters, Bob Costas, is here on A's Cast Live.
To the A's legendary players,
five-time Major League Baseball home run champ, Mark McGwire, is with us here.
You never know what stories you're going to hear.
We used to come out here to lunch and run with our shirts off.
You and Sandy.
This is A's Unfiltered with Chris Townsend.
This is a special edition of A's Unfiltered. We've got some of the smartest guys in the game of baseball. Former manager Joe Maddon, Buster Olney from ESPN, and also from ESPN, former player, now broadcaster, now professor, you name it, he does everything, Doug Glanville. But we'll start with a guy who we have loved having on for years. Is there anybody better to interview than Joe Maddon? Well, now joining us here on A's Cast Live, and it's great to have him back on the A's airwaves. The great Joe Maddon is with us from Chicago as he has his new book out with Tom Verducci. How are you?
I am well. I'm a little cold in Chicago. We had two great events yesterday, one at the Union League and one at Anderson's Bookstore in Downers Grove, so I'm having a good time.
Well, I got to think when you're back in Chicago, I mean, the man that broke the curse, it's got to be pretty special for you.
It is. I mean, you're reminded constantly, and these people here are the way I could describe Chicagoans. They're both tough and sweet at the same time. I really enjoy my conversations. I'm going to head out the door in a little bit, and I'm certain I'll be stopped when I walk over to the mall here. They're very grateful. They recap it, recount it so clearly. It means so much to them. You just got to stay open and listen, man. The people here are truly grateful, and I'm grateful for them.
You know, the book of Joe, Try Not to Suck at Baseball and Life. You know, Tom Verducci, we've had him on the program many times. He's a brilliant writer. He's turned in to be such a great broadcaster, too. He's one of the top journalists in our game. Why did you guys come together? How did it go about? And when did you decide that you wanted to write a book?
Well, I decided like in 2008 after we went to the series with the Rays, people were approaching me, but I knew I did not have enough cachet built up. I didn't think it was the right time. Won the World Series in 16 and then conclude with the Cubs in 19. And I ran into Tom and I brought it to his attention. I said, what do you think about this? He was open to it, obviously. And we talked about premise, and that would be the compare and contrasting managing in the 1980s to present times. And then also the Maddenisms, and as it turned out, they hit each chapter. So, wow, it was easy. I recorded about 100 hours while I was riding a bicycle in Mesa, Arizona during the pandemic and sent it to him daily. And he would come back to me with direction and eventually turned out to this. And I know I picked the right guy. He is as brilliant as you described.
You know, it's so interesting about your career, and I know we've talked about it before, but all the years in the minors – and then we got to know you when you were with Mike Socha and all those great years with the Angels. And then, of course, the Rays, which was now changing baseball, a new way to play the game. Then you go to the historic Cubs, and now you're with a big market, big money team. So just talk about how in your career you've seen it all, from the minors to the big market to the analytics. You've seen it all.
I've been grateful for that. I think it's really important. A lot of guys aren't doing that anymore. I mean, that's pretty much the way you had to do it back then. And I still think it's the right way. This is not a guy that's 68 going to be 69 speaking right now. It's just the right way to do things. You need a base. You need a foundation. I had great mentors. For me, it was Bob Clear at that particular time. Ron Plaza was the guy with the A's at that particular time. There was Guy Wellman with the Dodgers, Jimmy Snyder with the Cubs, Mr. Bob Kennedy with the Giants. I mean, all these guys were like pretty much that organization and how everything was taught. From the bottom up. And I loved it. I love Bob Clear was my mentor with the Angels. Of course, I had Marcel Ashman. I could go on and on. But these are the guys that helped me learn to think in regards to baseball and how to process my information, what I thought was important. And then eventually you get the opportunity to keep moving forward to the point where I do arrive in the big leagues. But I'm very grateful for that struggle and the fact that it took me so long to get here. Because it does matter. It does matter. I have a more complete outlook. I was a scout also. So I'm grateful for all these things that permitted me to eventually get to the big leagues as a manager analytically speaking, I was doing that for Soch and Terry Collins and even Marcel prior to become before it became popular. Didn't call it analytics, called it information. I was working off stat sheets, and I would try to call it down to the point where it was presentable in the dugout. I used to post things on the wall. I mean, like long legal size sheets of information that I would glean from all kinds of stuff, scouting reports, just from stat sheets, from spray charts, my own observation. And that would be on a dugout wall prior to every game. So I'm into it, absolutely into it. And so when it came to the point where I got to the Rays, Andrew said, listen, I don't want you having to do all that stuff every day. Let's assign this to different people and we'll do it for you, which was great. But I still like doing my own work, because once you write something down, you have a much greater chance of remembering it. So the more work you did on your own, the greater it stuck. So that's just a brief background in regards to how it got to that point. And yeah, it was when I got to the Rays, it really blew up in a good way.
Well, I mean, obviously, we're the organization that really made it all popular with the book Moneyball and then the movie with Brad Pitt and Billy Beane. So we've gone all through that. But I've told people, like, Branch Rickey back in the day with the Dodgers was basically using his form of analytics. This is not something that's new. But in my career, I've been very lucky, whether it's traveling in Major League Baseball. I worked in the NFL, also in the NBA. The one thing I do know, and I learned it more than ever, was, you know, getting the relationship with Bob Melvin and really getting to know Bob, and that people need to understand at the top level, whether it's the NFL, Major League Baseball, there has to be the leader there. I always say there has to be the guy at the front of the bus, at the front of the plane, the guy that leads the ship. And I learned that being in a people business and being able to take care, because these athletes, they got problems just like we do. They got problems on the field. They got problems off the field. Somebody has to be there. Somebody has to be the communicator. Bob Melvin, obviously, is one of the best in the business. I know it means a lot to you, the relationship with the players and everybody in the organization. It's like we're forgetting that we're in the community. You know, communication is a huge part of our business.
Yeah, it's evolved to the point where people pretty much only recognize bullpen decisions. I mean, anytime you hear about criticism post-game, it's always about bullpen decisions.
Yeah.
And that is just a minute part of what occurs. And furthermore, bullpen decisions sometimes go awry because the other team's good too. So that's I think, a product of how the game's reported, whether it's through media purposes or even social media. It's always about bullpen guys who are held to an impossible standard of perfection. What it really comes down to is, like you're insinuating, is that it's the relationships you build within the clubhouse, which communication, not only with your players, your coaches, your front office, and your fan base. We have to do the media several times a day. And yeah, you're right. The buck has to stop somewhere, right? And whether it's the front of the bus, the front of the plane, and your description is right on, this guy has to answer to all of these different moments. And that's it. I mean, I don't think it's really recognized enough or spoken about enough or understood enough, all that goes into managing a Major League Baseball club. And what you do on a daily basis is much more deep than when to bring in the right relief pitcher.
You know, we're getting the book. It's being sent to us, and I can't wait to read it. And, you know, I'm going to tell a lot of our listeners that, you know, at this time of the year, Joe, we're looking for Christmas gifts, right? What do we give baseball fans? What to give people they don't have? It sounds like this book would be an ultimate Christmas gift. And one of the things that I think that's always been that we've known about you, it's about helping people, just not your own players. That's just something that it's like a gift that you have. Talk about how you've always felt that you want to give back to people and help other people.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think we all need to be in that moment. It's just something inbred in me from where I came from in Pennsylvania. My mom and my dad, the nuns that taught me, the community that I was raised in, and I'm still there. I just left there. I was just there for most, once I got let go by the Angels, I was there the remaining of the summer. Yeah, it's all about that. It's all about giving back. It's all about passing it along, however you want to describe it. And so I'm very grateful that I received that, that thing within you that wants you to do that, and based by upon the people that I'd been with before. And so, yeah, it's something that's very important to me. We have the foundation, the Respect 90 Foundation, and it's got a pretty large umbrella. We started with primarily helping the homeless through Thanksgiving dinners. We've also then evolved into the Hazleton Integration Project. Back in Hazleton, we have our own building, the Hazleton Community Center. I just had a book signing there recently, where we've attempted to bring together the Hispanic and Anglo cultures within my hometown in Chicago, where I'm at right now, we did a lot of boxing, youth boxing for the Crushers Club on the South Side here, and the City Boxing, Youth Boxing of Chicago. We raised over $500,000 for them. Through that, we've done pediatric cancer stuff regarding shaving of our head in spring training. One year, one spring training, the Cubs, just the Cub players alone, in an hour, donated, it was close to $100,000 that eventually turned into a room at the Banner Health there in Mesa, where kids getting cancer treatment can go for their treatment and then post-treatment to get a gift. I mean, it's a lot of stuff that we've encountered, and it's been very gratifying, and I'm very fortunate that I was raised by the people that I was that makes me want to do things like this.
Well, let's really bring it to life. Cody, my producer, Cody, come on here and tell Joe how he's inspired you.
Yeah, Joe. So I use a meditation app called Vision Pursue, and your quote, "Try not to suck," has been a huge part of that. Since I started that in 2017, and one of your madnisms is about seeing everything with first time eyes, and they say new eyes in that. So those are two things that I've lived by for the last 5 years. And the "Try not to suck" pops up every once in a while as a daily visionary thing. And I love that quote. I tell people all the time. I tell my wife about it. So I just want to thank you for putting that quote out there and the app for using it, because it's meant a lot to me the last 5 years.
Thanks, Cody. And just to expand upon that, I appreciate that. Within the book, I talked about the comparing and contrasting of managing from the 80s to present day. The other part is all the madnisms. Each chapter begins with something like that. See with first time eyes, feel with first time passion. Tell me what you think, know what you've heard. Try not to suck is one of them. Embrace the target. Whatever you put out there comes back to you. All these things. I wanted it to be more than just a baseball book. I wanted to apply to personal life on a daily basis. And you're validating that. And I appreciate that, Code. It's something that's very important to me. I didn't want it just to be little Joey grew up on 11th Street and played baseball, then eventually went to the Cubs. And they won the World Series. So
don't forget football. You played a little quarterback back in the day, I believe.
That's how I got to college, man. Pennsylvania High School, Friday Night Lights, man. Nothing like it. Nothing like it. First game started against Berwick when I was a sophomore. That's a moment you'll never forget. And that's how I got to Lafayette College, because of that. Then eventually it morphed into a baseball career. And then it turned into madnisms. And now I'm here talking to you guys. It's been a wonderful ride to this point. I wanted to continue. But I built up different thoughts, philosophies along the way, and that's part of why I wanted to do this book, to pass that stuff along also.
Yeah, let's end on this. My old head coach at San Jose State just went into the San Jose Hall of Fame, won a lot of games, got us into the College World Series, and he was all about keeping things simple. He always used the KISS system, keep it simple, right. Stupid. And your madnisms are all very simple, but simple really reaches everybody. Why is that so key to keep it simple in your teachings?
Yeah, mine's do simple better. That's what I came up with a couple years ago. Why? Because everybody believes an answer to a question needs to be convoluted or complicated. And people fail to just realize, just reduce, and get this to the simplest form. Get it to that nugget that makes most sense to me, that could remind me about all of these different layers or factors about whatever it is I'm trying to attack or get better at. So I did the do simple better approach in a hot moment in a baseball game as an example. You're not going to recall. Your body should be on autopilot at that point. But if you get out there on the mound, if you're in the batter's box and things get a little bit quicker, you're just bad pitch or a bad swing, whatever, you have to have a nugget and you have to have something to go to, the breath as your anchor, whatever it takes. And it's a simple thing, but we've been taught to think that the answers have to be complex or convoluted. I'm exactly the opposite.
Well, word on the street is the golf game's pretty good.
Getting better. And that is, there's a perfect example. One swing thought, right elbow tuck, that's it. That's all I'm at right now. And I've gone through everything all summer. I can't sit here and talk to you right now and watch TV simultaneously and give both all my attention. You got to focus on one thing at a time, and preferably something small, not something large and complicated.
Well, the book of Joe, Try Not to Suck at baseball and Life. I can tell you, we will pump this and try and sell as many as possible. Appreciate it. I think it will make a great Christmas gift. You're a treasure in our game. You've been good to us over the years. I hope you manage again, but if not, there's so much that you can do in life and helping people, but it's an honor to have you on the program. Good luck with everything and have great holidays.
I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. It's really an honor. My best to everybody out west. I'm going to be in Arizona soon, and then maybe I'll get up to the Bay Area to do some signing in the near future. But again, I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. Thank you.
I can't wait to read the book. It's going to be fantastic. And when you get Buster Olney, he's a busy guy, especially during the World Series. But we were lucky enough to get Buster. What a great job by Cody. Here is Buster Olney from ESPN. Well, now joining us on A's Cast Live, you read him on ESPN.com. You see him on Sunday Night Baseball, and he's the host of the number one podcast in our business, Baseball Tonight. The great Buster Olney joins us from ESPN. Buster, how are you? It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. I'm great because as you and I talk, we're in the cusp of this really interesting World Series. So I'm doing well, and I'm down, you know, as you and I were talking beforehand, I'm down in Texas after getting 5 inches of snow in Montana the other day. So it's a nice respite.
You know, I think about the Super Bowls that I covered, and you had the 2 weeks and just seems like this monster layoff. And obviously in our game where we play every day, to have the layoff they've had, it seems almost like a Super Bowl week where we're having a media day and everybody gets to talk down there in Houston. Just what do you think about the layoff, and how does it truly affect the teams?
I think the Astros have become the embodiment of the argument that rest hurts players, right? Because they had the bye, and then they rolled through their division series in 3 games, and then they rolled through their American League Championship Series in 4 games. So they've had a lot of days off, basically 7 games in what, 4 weeks? And yet they're playing really well. We'll see with the Phillies, because they seem like that they were on such a roll offensively. You know, all their guys in this powerful lineup were swinging the bat well. Rhys Hoskins, Bryce Harper. For me, the challenge is greater for them, in part because they haven't had to deal with this. They've been playing day after day after day. Remember the Rockies team that finished up, like, went on an absolute roll? And then they, after rolling through the National League Championship Series, they went into the World Series against the Red Sox. They couldn't get restarted.
Yeah, we talked to Dan O'Dowd about that, who's now on MLB Network. And it's just, you know, you have that momentum, you have that it factor. You just don't know how long you're going to have that genie in the bottle. And I look at all the scenarios for this World Series. There's only one scenario I just don't see happening. I don't see the Phillies winning in 4. I don't see the Phillies winning in 5. Everything else I see could be on the board. Do you see it that way?
I have a hard time seeing the Phillies winning the World Series. I got to be honest with you. You know, after seeing how dominant the Astros pitching has been so far this year, Phillies are a great story. Who knows if they wind up stealing one of the 2 games here in Houston? You know, maybe that changes things. They go to Philadelphia with that great crowd. But I just keep on waiting for the Phillies bullpen to turn back into a pumpkin, right? I mean, they struggled so much during the course of the year, 23rd out of 30 teams in ERA. And you thought going into the postseason that ultimately would take that down. Or the Phillies defense, which we talked about all year as being a problem. It really hasn't hurt them so far. And I guess if the bullpen's good and they play efficient defense, maybe they could beat the Astros, but man, the Astros are so good.
Bottom line is, for our fan base, we don't like them. It's become a rivalry, obviously, where we are right now really doesn't matter, but a few years ago, it was definitely a rivalry. So whatever I say is not going to matter. But for everybody else in baseball, the majority of the guys from the scandal are gone. It's a different roster. They've turned it over. It's a different, you know, Lunau's gone. Hinch is gone. So much has changed. Is this, if they do win, are people finally going to look past the scandal and give this team their due, who's now been in the World Series 4 out of the last 6 years?
You already know the answer to that. The answer is no. And I know I saw a poll, I think, on I can't remember where I saw this. But it was like 88% of the country is rooting for the Phillies.
Yeah.
And not only, I think part of it is because they are a likable group. I mean, how could you not like Kyle Schwarber? You know, Bryce Harper, clearly, you know, evolving during the course of his baseball career, his baseball lifetime, which is really fun. JT, you know, Nola, they're a fun team. But let's face it, even though they're all small handful of guys left from 2017, the sins of that team are going to be forever held against guys who wear the Astros uniform. You know, you've seen that in the past where, you know, guys who weren't even on that team get booed in other ballparks. That's just the way it goes. So I think for the players, it's going to be important. I think for Jose Altuve, it's going to be important for Bregman to win a championship past 2017. But for fans, that will never go away.
Especially in our neighborhood, I can tell you that. You know, we were talking to people from Philly, and I said to them, from afar, this is what it feels like for me. It feels like, and this is how I'm going to give the Phillies a chance. They feel like that group of summer ball high school guys that are all pretty good. They come together. They're a puzzle that doesn't fit. But throughout the summer, they're having a great time. Continuity starts to happen. You start liking each other. You might be drinking beers after games. And next thing you know, you become pretty unbeatable. And there's just something about you. You have that it factor, and that you start taking down teams. And everybody from Philly goes, yeah, it kind of feels that way, because as we know, it didn't always go the right way. It didn't end the right way the way they backed in. But right now they have that mentality that we're not losing to anybody, no matter what anybody believes. They have this it factor. If I have to give them a chance, it's they've got that. It doesn't matter. It's us against the world, and they just keep doing it.
Yep, I completely agree with that. And someone you know well, Johnny Gomes, played on a team like that with the Boston Red Sox in 2013. Remember that whole group with Gomes and Shane Victorino and David Ross? You know, they went from last place to first place. They it felt like that they were just destined to win that year. And the other part that they really shared was the home run. You know, earlier today I talked to AJ Hinch. And I asked him, you know, what for you is the biggest X factor in this World Series? And he said, the Phillies hitting home runs. And when he described the impact of their home runs, it really reminded me of like someone talking about the impact of a monster dunk in an NBA series, right? Where it's not only the impact of the, you know, on the scoreboard, but it's also on the, from the player to player, the crowd, how they get into it. That is the fuel now for the Phillies. The impact of their home runs, which they've been doing a ton of lately, you know, it's something, you know, with Rhys Hoskins and Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber with that 488-foot home run, the impact went beyond, you know, the run that they put up on the board in that moment.
You know, since you're talking basketball, I've been saying this about Bryce Harper. He's really kind of our version of LeBron James. Now, I'm not comparing him to LeBron. I mean, LeBron's a global superstar. But from the standpoint of, as basically a kid, you're on the cover of Sports Illustrated. I mean, you're introduced to the world as a high school kid. So everybody's watching every single move. And like LeBron James has done a lot of good for all the communities he's been in. He's been a terrific guy. Bryce Harper's been the same way. Just talk about that, how we've known Bryce Harper since he was basically a high school kid, and it's very similar to LeBron.
Yeah, one of the cool things for you and I in covering this sport, you know, year after year after year, is we now get to see guys from the beginning of their careers to the end. And one of the neat things is that they change, not only as, you know, competitors and what they do on the field, but they change as people. You know, when Bryce got to the big leagues, the perception of him was he was really cocky. I was at the game when Cole Hamels drilled him on purpose.
Really?
On a Sunday night game. Yeah, to test him, right?
Yeah.
You know, is this guy up for it? Other players didn't like him. Like Derek Jeter, there have been votes that Bryce Harper is the most overrated player in baseball. Well, what you heard from the Phillies people from the moment they signed him was he's up for everything. Whatever they asked him to do. You know, charity stuff, appearances, interviews. And we experienced that on Sunday Night Baseball. We, you know, asked him to wear a microphone, and you know how it goes. You ask the question, you assume that the superstar player probably is going to say no. Well, not only did he say yes, but he completely embraced it. We had him wear a microphone during the pandemic, And he was supposed to wear it like in the second inning, and there was a play against the right field wall, and the earpiece that he was wearing got knocked out, and you think, okay, that's the end of it. Well, he went back to the warning track during the half inning, found the earpiece, stuck it back in. He's talking to our producers like, hey, guys, can you hear me? I've got the earpiece back. And he talked to us for 8 innings during the course of that broadcast with no fans in the stands, and the score was like 11-1. They were losing, and you're like, oh, my God, like this guy gets it. And it's so cool to see the growth of Bryce along those lines, how, you know, he signed with the Phillies. He embraced everything Philadelphia, embraced the challenge, embraced the crowd. It's remarkable how much he's changed during his career.
You had a tweet that I thought was great, and we talked about it here on this show. As you know, we take a lot from Baseball Tonight and from you because you do such an unbelievable job where, you know, listen to the L.A. fans whine about the layoff and the bye. I love the idea. Hey, you can pick your path. You want to start playing right away? You don't. Who do you want to play? I love that idea. But in the end, going home early, if you're the Dodgers, going out the way the Yankees did, getting swept, are you okay with L.A. and New York both saying, you know what, we're going to stay with the managers, we're going to stay with everything, and we'll go get them again next year? Are you okay with that?
I am, and I got to tell you, and I know you're not going to want to hear this because you say, you know, with your fan base, you don't like the Astros.
Yeah.
All this conversation this week about, you know, fire Aaron Boone and, you know, how about that decision you made with the bullpen in the sixth inning and how awful was that, and Brian Cashman. I'm laughing. I'm like, I'm watching these two teams play, and they're not even close. You know, the Yankees, you know, where they are now compared to what the front office envisioned with DJ LeMahieu out, Andrew Benintendi out, four members of that bullpen out. They weren't even close to the Astros. It wasn't even a competition. I think it would have been a shock to me if they had won, you know, a game or two in this series. So I totally get why Hal Steinbrenner will keep those, you know, will keep Aaron Boone, keep, you know, Brian Cashman in his front office. I think the whole conversation that seems to be around New York teams, you don't win the World Series, you suck. That doesn't reflect the way competition is. That's like an 11-year-old flipping the board and saying, I'm going to take my game and I'm not going to play anymore. I just think it's kind of silly. And with the Dodgers, look, they've evolved into, I think, the Yankees in terms of that expectation. You know, Dave Roberts said to me during the course of the year, look, we know with the way our franchise has gone, if we don't win the World Series, a lot of people are going to be disappointed, including the players.
You know, Dusty Baker, when right before Ray Fosse stopped broadcasting, we were doing these classic moments where we would call, it was like, you know, friends of Ray's, whether it was like Jim Palmer, we did Dusty Baker, and the three of us would just have a nice long chat. So we had Dusty Baker on for like a half hour. And, you know, I've known Dusty since his days with San Francisco, and he was a manager. Just what will it mean for him? We already know his greatness, player, an ambassador, obviously one of the coolest guys ever to wear a uniform. He's going to go into the Baseball Hall of Fame. But just what will it mean for baseball for Dusty Baker to finally have that World Series trophy as a manager? We know he did it as a player.
Yeah, I think that for, you know, folks in our industry, for writers, you know, that it'll mean that they finally can put an end to that. They can check that box. So when they talk about his career, they can say, yes, he was as a player, he won a championship, had a remarkable career. And then as a manager, he had a lot of great teams. Players loved to play for him. And then in the end, he won a championship. But because you've gotten to know Dusty, really, when you think about the man's life, I think you'll agree with me, it'll feel like a very small thing. Because if you get somebody who can talk to you about smoking weed with Jimi Hendrix or hanging out with Henry Aaron and has this range of stories just about everybody. I mean, he's and I say this with all due respect. I don't mean it literally with this character. He's the Forrest Gump of baseball, right? He's someone who's been around everything and knows everybody and is absolutely beloved by everybody who comes across him. You know, I got to work with him on Sunday on Baseball Tonight. I feel like that when he makes his Hall of Fame speech, it's a when at this point, that whatever they accomplish this year in the World Series, that'll be a minor footnote to this man's remarkable life and career.
So safe to say you will not bet the family farm on the Phillies.
I will not bet the family farm on the Phillies. And by the way, I sold my part of the family farm to my little brother earlier this year. So that's, I probably should stop saying that.
We can't bet that anymore. I love that line. I love the fact you bet the family farm.
Well, I could bet it, but I think my little brother might now have a problem with me betting his property.
I just want to let you know, we made sure we got the helmet out today for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I loved telling you that story, and I can still see it flying across my backyard, right? When I do those headfirst slides, imagining that team.
I'm telling you, this helmet, it was a giveaway. I can't remember what year it was. It takes so many people back to when they're growing up in the 70s.
Yeah, and I told you that team tortured me because I was a Dodger fan at age 10, and yet I still bought that helmet because I thought it was so cool looking. And those teams were so much fun to watch, you know, with the style and the speed and the whole thing. And so, yeah, that was among the first batting helmets that I bought in my collection.
You know, where we are in the cycle, we honored 72 last year, and this coming year we're going to honor 1973. Of course, they took down the very surprised New York Mets who beat the Big Red Machine. So we'll be celebrating all the 73 guys. We just had Raleigh Fingers on recently. We'll be celebrating all those greats. But, Buster, always an honor to have you on. Thank you so much. Keep up all the great work. We'll be following you during the World Series, reading you and listening to the podcast. And, of course, can't wait to see you in San Diego for the winter meetings.
That'll be an absolute blast. Thanks for having me, and I always love talking with you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We say this all the time. This guy might be the smartest guy in baseball. A graduate of Penn, a very good player, turned broadcaster, turned writer, turned podcaster, and of course, a professor at UConn. Here is Doug Glanville. There's nothing that this man doesn't do. He is a broadcaster. He is a writer. He's a professor. You hear him part of the broadcast pre and post and inside the broadcast for ESPN Radio. Former terrific player. Great to have you back on the program. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm just trying to figure out what time zone I'm in right now. This in San Diego and then Cleveland. And so I got back this morning from Philly, and wow, what electricity in that ballpark. But yeah, I'm doing great. I mean, I'm enjoying it, covering the playoffs. I'll be in studio tonight to do some radio. And yeah, we're just going to enjoy some baseball.
Well, you know all about Philly. Just tell us what is it like inside the bank and the energy and how players truly feed off this energy?
Well, you know, we talked to Rhys Hoskins about it, and, you know, we're trying to understand, like, does it make a difference, right? And he said something different. You know, it's loud, you get fired up, but he said it forces them in a good way to really be demonstrative and celebrate and get in the moment. So when you watch their bench, I mean, they're on top step, they're all, you know, and they say that's what's something that they feed off. So if anything, beyond like distracting the other team, it's also that they excite the players on the Phillies. And it's really like no other place. I mean, you talk to all these opponents, different players I've spoken to, and I'm not sure right now anybody has a better home field advantage in baseball than the Phillies right now. It is so loud in there, man. I mean, it's just absolutely, you can't hear. Like, I was on the set of the Gold Glove Award show, and then we came later with Baseball Tonight, and Tim Kirchen was sitting between, I was sitting between him and Jessica Mendoza, and they couldn't even hear each other. Like, it was like we were literally standing next to each other. So, I mean, it was unbelievable.
You know, when I think about an environment like that, and it's your home, and you feel so comfortable, you can see how certain players, they play free and easy. I know a lot of people are trying to talk about tipping pitches right now, but whether it didn't matter who the opponent was, at the towards the very, very end of the season, now into the postseason. Just talk about the way the Phillies are playing, especially at home. It just seems so relaxed. It seems so natural that the whole postseason pressure doesn't seem to be there with them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, they the big pressure, when we talked to Rob Thompson, their manager, he's like, if we can just get in, I think we're going to be in our best, at our best, because, you know, they, you know, we talk about they're being built for the postseason. You know, when you go on a free agency and you sign Schwarber, Castellanos, you have Harper, you're not thinking like, oh, I'm going to be a run prevention team. You're not worried about defense. You're worried about hitting the ball in the ballpark, right? That's what you're trying to do. Yeah. And you give up a run, you score two, right? That's what they thought about. And they had a good enough pitching to kind of do well on that side of it. Well, that was, you know, didn't get them the streaks that they wanted. They made the managerial change. But then in the postseason, that's beautiful because home runs are absolutely the dominant force. The more, if you out-homer your opponent, you are very likely to win. And the Astros got out-homered last World Series. I think it was something astronomical, like 15-2 or something. And they amazingly still won two games, but it wasn't enough. And that's what the Phillies did. You know, they hit five home runs. And when you make Lance McCullers look like batting practice, that tells you how good your offense is. So, you know, they knew the defense would be a weakness. They knew that the DH, the fact that Harper was able to DH this year was just, that was a good fortune, because had you not had the universal DH, Harper, you wouldn't be able to play him. And then you would have really had to have Castellanos and weaker defenders in the outfield the whole year. And not, you know, so they got Marsh, that really helped. And the left side of the infield got better enough. And now it's just bash ball.
Yeah, speaking to your point here at Citizens Bank Park, they've outscored their opponents 42-15 and all their wins, and they've out-homered their opponents 17-6 at home. So the ball is going out of the yard. And when I think about, you know, the way things are going for the Houston Astros, obviously they're not out of it. Long way to go here. Tonight's very pivotal. Can't go down 3-1, but they just haven't looked – is it me, or they just haven't looked good so far in the World Series?
Yeah, you know, they had – they did for a minute in the first – you know, game you were on, you were like, oh, here comes the Astros, right? 5-0. Yeah. And then, you know, go Verlander, come on, you're done. Nope, that's the Phillies, right? And, you know, the Phillies, you kind of miss out sometimes that they're really good hitters. They're not just home run guys. They are sluggers, but they're actually good hitters. Hoskins is disciplined. Harper's disciplined. Schwarber's discipline, right? You have Real Muto. I mean, these guys are good hitters, and they can wear a team down. That's what you start to see, the pitch count go up and all these things. They're fouling balls off. And if their bottom of the order does anything, you know, they're going to turn over the lineup. And then anything that the bottom does sets the table for Schwarber, you know, because he's a leadoff guy. So you got to face a guy who led the league in home runs right out of the gate. Good luck, right? So the Astros got punched back. And Verlander gave up a lead he never had given up before in his career. And now all of a sudden, you know, you win game two and you feel better because the defense of the Phillies kind of bit them. But then game three was almost like, it's almost like you're boxing and you're like, okay, you're kind of evenly matched. And maybe you think the Astros have more talent. And then the Phillies like literally knock you down and you have to do a standing eight count or whatever. You know, like that's how shocking it is in that way. Like, that wasn't just a loss. That was just a defeat. And how they come back right away, they're going to have to come back quickly in game four. They're going to find themselves on the outside looking in.
Yeah, they came into this thing heavy, heavy favorites. They're now the underdog. So it's kind of like, Buster Douglas is fighting back against Mike Tyson, and there's a problem here in Tokyo, Japan. We all remember that back in the day. You know, speaking of tipping pitches, Steve Sparks from the Astros, longtime knuckleballer, now broadcaster for them, he was on the program yesterday going, you know, the problem with McCullers is he will not throw fastballs to left-handed hitters. So it's like everybody's like, is he tipping his pitches? It's like, whether he's tipping his pitches or not, you know, as a left-handed hitter, you go up there, you're going to see slider, slider, maybe a change, but slider, slider. So whether he's tipping pitches or not, as a hitter, as a lefty, don't you already know what's coming?
Right, you do. And look, he has four pitches that he throws, you know, 15% or more. It's very even, actually, 25% sliders, 25% curveball, 25%. And then he throws maybe 17% changeup. So he's very even. So that's what he relies on. Now, one thing, you know, to McCullers' defense, I guess, when you look at the actual physics of his pitches, this guy has exceptional spin. in downward direction for his curveball and more laterally with his slider. So the thing about McCullers is they are two different pitches. They may be in the same velocity range, but they move very dramatically different. Usually you don't have both. You're not like Shane Bieber with like really good curveball and really good slider and really good cutter, right? They're similar, but they're not. That's what McCullers, when he's good, had going. And my view was that he was trying to work down and get the strike to ball chase, and he was getting strike to strike. He was starting up and it was ending in the zone. And the Phillies, good hitters, didn't miss it because they were looking for like the secondary pitches, because 70% of the time, that's what he's going to throw. So they stayed back. So I think it was a lot more mistakes and the flatness of his pitches. He just wasn't sharp. And when you don't locate in big league baseball and the ball's on that horizontal plane with no bite to it, yeah, you're going to be staring at your right fielder a lot. I think he was very gracious in his post game, kind of recognizing that, like, I was bad and I didn't hit my spots.
You know, I know everybody now, you know, they're trying to, he's tipping his pitches and everything. I've had many of conversations, and I don't know about you as a hitter, they didn't want to know. Because what happens is, and I've been starting to get into sports psychology, and we know that no matter what the sport, athletes perform better when they stay in their routines. Whether it's your pregame routine, your in-game routine, always in routine. When you now all of a sudden, I know what's coming, guys start to get out of that routine, and that affects them. That's why you've heard for years that people go, I don't want to know. I just want to see, react, stay in my routine. For you as a hitter, would you want to know? If maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong, but would you want to at least think, I know what's coming?
Yeah, well, that was a ringing endorsement of the 2017 Astros. They knew it was coming. So I think that the challenge with that is it works well with certain hitters. Like, all right, to the Astros' defense, if you want to say that, you have to be a certain disciplined hitter to take advantage of knowing what's coming, right? I mean, I think that's the important side of it. You have to be able to adjust and say, okay, yeah, I know a fastball is coming, but I have to zone it up. It has to be my fastball. It has to be my zone overlapping over the strike zone. I think that's not that easy. And you can get too big, you can get out of it. And so it goes back to the Phillies hitters being not only power guys, but disciplined, the ability to hit the ball out of the ballpark. And the fact that they can actually stay back and not chase balls because they know what's coming. That's another skill set. And not everybody has it. Not everybody knows how to leverage it. I wasn't that guy. You're like, yeah, it was nice to know it was a fastball, but I wasn't going to be zoning up like it has to be above the letters and all that. You know, you end up swinging at it no matter where it is, right? It's like, so I don't think that was great for me necessarily. But I do think that, you know, he'd been tipping subtly. It's possible. Bobby Abreu was the best I've ever seen at that. But even though he was in the zone and it was kind of flat, and I think a lot of teams would have hit him regardless.
Yeah, because you even look at the cheating scandal with the Astros, how the banging of the trash can, they went back and, you know, in the early part of the season, they weren't banging it all the time because they were trying to figure it out. It wasn't until later in the season where it could bang like 80-something times a game. Because the worst thing in the world is a hitter, right? If you go up there and you think something's coming and it's wrong, now you've mentally fried yourself in the box. I mean, that's not the kind of mentality you want when you're up at the plate.
Yeah, well, Scott Rowland's a good example. He didn't like it. We always talked about being on second base and whether you're trying to relay signs and all that. And actually, I really never played for a team that did that, other than Texas considered it in 2003. I think most players were like, I don't want to know, or I'm going to swing. So it really depends on the hitter. I know Rowland absolutely rejected it, and he didn't want you trying to steal third either. So that was another. So yeah, it depends. And you know, really good teams, like you look at Harper talking to Alec Bohm or something. Like, good teams have like a team approach, and they understand the strengths of each hitter, and they know how to communicate advantages in real time. Those teams that kind of get on that same page to beat a player, to beat a pitcher, you know, they're going to do well. And it seems like the Phillies also have that intangible to what they're doing right now.
What do you make of the criticism of Dusty Baker through this series now and sticking with starters too long?
Well, you know, I think, you know, knowing Dusty and talking to him at different times and also just playing for him, I think he's kind of familiar with it, you know, that there is a tendency to kind of go after his X's and O's. It's been a kind of lifelong criticism of him using his gut and things like that. But, you know, Dusty definitely relies not only on the data, but also the personnel. Like, he's like, I hired coaches, or I have coaches for a reason, and I have to lean in and trust them to a large degree. I mean, the Astros are one of the more shifting teams in baseball. They certainly take the data to move defenders around. That's not something Dusty did when he played or in an old school way. You know, he always says there's no old school, there's no new school, it's the right school. You know, we always talk about that. So, you know, I think it's going to come with the territory. I know McCullers, his basis was, at least this is what he said, was that McCullers had a couple of good innings. So, he was hoping that he can give him some more innings, because, look, every inning he goes eats up innings, and that therefore saves your bullpen. And when you're about to play two more games in Philly on the road, you need every tool at your disposal. So, you know, I think it makes sense that he was trying to go for it. Bob Melvin, I know, always went another batter just trying to set up his bullpen a certain way. And it bit him eventually with Josh Hader not being ready or whatever that was against Harper. But, you know, you know your personnel. And I think that was what he was shooting for. And he said, look, I wear it. Like, it didn't work out. They tacked on more runs, but we didn't score anyway. So you're not going to win anything with zero.
Yeah, that's so funny. And I get caught in that, especially this past year, where the A's, we had a lot of games where we scored zero or just one. And here I am ranting and raving over stuff. I had to catch myself going, we didn't score runs, so what does it matter, right? Even hockey took out the ties. I mean, if you don't score, it doesn't matter. Let's end on this. We had those great commercials, the Dos Equis, the most interesting man in the world. If we had most interesting man in the that's my computer. If we had the most interesting man in baseball, you're definitely on that list. Once we get after the World Series, what do you got going? What's going to be in Doug Glanville's life after baseball as we go into the offseason?
Well, you know, I never stop. So, all right. So, number one, I'm wearing this right here. This is a UConn Huskies sweater.
Your Huskies, yeah.
So I teach at UConn in the offseason, a class called Sport and Society. It's really cool. We talk about the history of how sports have informed social issues. And then we bring it current, and we talk about how sports try to change society. And I use law, a section on law, a section on politics, and a section on the media. And so we have a lot of guests, you know, Don Fear and Adam Jones and Sean Doolittle and Jessica Mendoza. We've had a star-studded guest list of people coming in, either into class or Zooming in. So that's, you know, I'll do that. I have a show that I do once a month called Classes in Session for Marquee Sports. And same type of theme as my class, except in the 30-minute show. And this last issue was on the expansion of the college football playoff system. So we cover it, you know, it's not just baseball, but so I try to do, you know, I love baseball, of course, and I just love how sports give us an opportunity to talk about issues to bring us together. And so I dive a little more into that when baseball is over.
Well, I got to think, those trips to Philly, I mean, in your life as a Philly, I mean, you went to Penn, right? I mean, it's been a good area for you.
It really has. And it was fun to be back there again, just the craziness. And Citizens Bank Park was my last year when they built the ballpark.
You got a year there. Awesome.
I got 1 year. So my claim to fame is the first walk-off home run at Citizens Bank Park.
I love it.
One
trivia.
Of my like, two home runs that year. So I did get the taste, and they also had a new spring training site that year. So I wanted to go out in style and retire after that.
Well, it's always an honor to have you on the program. Thank you so much, and let's hook up during the off season and appreciate the time.
All right. Sounds great. Anytime, guys.
The great Doug Glanville join us right here on A's Cast. As I say, we're always smarter. We'd like to thank Joe Madden, Buster Olney, and Doug Glanville for stopping by A's Cast Live. Now back to A's Cast, powered by iHeartRadio.
This has been a presentation of the Oakland Athletics.